Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, what's up, everybody? Hi, how's it going out there tonight here on the best show? It's a Tuesday here. Wait, what month is it already? It's April. How'd that happen? How did one quarter of 2022 go away already? That's bonkers. Bonkers that went away. One quarter's gone already. Well, we keep moving forward. Let's keep moving forward. We got some work to do. And tonight on The Best Show, first of all, my name's Tom. I'm the host of The Best Show. It's so nice to meet you if you're new to the show. And if you're not, welcome back. It's great to have my old friends coming back through that door. And I know there's a lot of people feel like they know the show better than other people. Well, guess what? Everybody knows part of the show. Not everybody knows the whole thing. Kind of like how I felt when I got hooked on Will Smith. And when I realized, I thought I knew everything about him. It was unbelievable. I was so convinced that I knew the whole deal. And then I get in an argument with, I was in an argument with someone else in the Big Willie community, and we were arguing about just what our favorite song to get pumped up is. And also, that's going to be an upcoming topic. Dudio, write that down, please. What's your pump? What do you do to get pumped up? That's a topic for The Best Show. Please write that down. No? Nothing?
I got it.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
Sorry, I was typing.
Oh, no, that's fine. That's fine. And, we're talking about what music is best to get pumped up. And I said, I get pumped up listening to I Can't Stop is my favorite one to get pumped up to. You know, of course, off of, you know what album. Set. You could say the album name, Jason.
Big Willie, yeah. Big Willie Style?
No, it's on Born to Rain. Oh, my goodness. Oh. Unbelievable.
I only had Big Willie Style, and he's the DJ, I'm the rapper.
Yeah, well.
So, it's on me.
There's plenty more there. There's plenty more there. So, we're arguing over which song gets us most pumped up. And then my friends start saying they get pumped up listening to Will 2K. And I was like, well, look, that's a great song. It's one of the standouts on Millennium. But it's not the best. But then we both agreed on, that was an argument, but then we both agreed on one thing, that the Christmas EP he put out is probably the hidden chestnut, no pun intended, in terms of Christmas stuff, the chestnuts roasting on an open fire. That his Christmas record is one of the best Christmas records we've ever heard. Now, have you heard? You've heard his Christmas record, right, guys? Who here? It's a rhetorical question. I know you three all know the Christmas album. Oh, hold on. I gotta press a button still. Hold on. There we go. Wait, no, did I do it? No, that and that. There we go. Now I took care of all the tech stuff. Sorted that tech biz out. So, I know Pat and Mike and Jason. I can assume that, yes, you know the Christmas album. Otherwise, you wouldn't be on this show.
Yeah. I have it on picture disc.
I'm still getting over the fact that I missed out on an album called Willennium that came out in 1999.
You didn't miss out. It's there for you the whole time.
You were also too worried about Y2K.
I'm 22 years late to the party, though.
Well, the party's still going, though. That's the beauty of being a member of the Big Willie community. The party don't stop. The Christmas
album. I got to do a search of how many other people named albums with Enium at the end of it that year. I'm sure that wasn't the only one.
Scannered Enium.
Okay, you got one right off the bat.
Yeah, well, look, you guys can argue all about that all you want. All I know is that this Will Smith Christmas record is something that the fan base has been rallying around in this very troubling week.
What is it called?
Will Smith Christmas Joy to the World.
I knew that. I just wanted to make sure everyone out there knew.
Yeah. Fine. You want to hear a little bit of it?
I'd love to.
It's a trick. That was a trick. I tricked you. I got you. It's not the same Will Smith. That was a trick. I wanted to see who fell for it. I'm trying to expose the frauds in the Will Smith community and Dudio. You just exposed yourself as a huckster.
I am a huckster. I'm an outsider. I'm no longer part of the Big Willie Style Council.
I love the Will Smith Christmas album so much. No, there's a different Will Smith, a piano player named Will Smith.
Yeah, that's the one I meant.
You almost caught him and he escaped on a technicality. So look, will we talk more about Will Smith tonight? Probably not. This might be it. Who knows, though? We go where the conversation goes. One of the reasons we won't be talking a whole lot about Will Smith tonight is he didn't release any double albums. And we're talking about, what are the best double albums? I mean, look, do I wish he released a double album? Of course. His stuff would sound so slamming on vinyl. Can you imagine getting a fancy stereo system, a Macintosh, the speaker and the turntable and the whole thing, and then you put a Will Smith record on it? Say you got a copy of Lost and Found on vinyl. Right? And you put that thing on the player. You put that record down. And if it's a double album, you put that down. And the second you hear Mr. Nice Guy blasting from that thing on vinyl, I guarantee that's a game changer. Party starter. Can you imagine what Party Starter would sound like on vinyl? Because it would feel like you're in the room with him. Recording the thing. I don't know why I'm taunting myself with this. It's not on vinyl. I'm really.
You think, you know, now that his movie career may be on hold for a little while, do you think maybe he'll go back to the music?
Fingers crossed.
I'm trying to see the light through at the end of this tunnel. Yeah,
no, fingers crossed he would, put the acting on pause, because he just hit the ultimate triumph. He won an Oscar.
Yeah.
But now you got your Oscar. I got to say this for Will Smith. It's EGOT time. It's EGOT time, Will. We all know his status with Emmys, right? We all know the deal.
I think you know a little more than I do.
Well, he has an Emmy.
Okay, he's got one. Okay.
Yeah. For being a producer.
Oh.
Did you know that, Dudio?
I didn't know that. What was he the producer?
Okay, well, that was a trick because he didn't, because there's a different Will Smith 1-1 for producing Veep.
I thought we were talking about the Veep producer, Will Smith. Are we not talking about?
No, we're not. No, we're
okay,
not.
Okay, that's what I meant.
Okay. Look, we're going to get there. Me and the Will Smith fans, we'll get there. He's got a Grammy. He's got an Oscar. He don't got no Tony, and he don't got no Emmy. Hang tight, Will. We're gonna get you both. The Big Willie fans are gonna rally behind you, get you both. But that's not what we're talking about now. I wanted to maybe I'll approach like Light in the Attic or a label like that about putting the albums out on vinyl. Right. Maybe they'll do. Maybe some audiophile versions of those would be good. Like those high end remastered ones. Also, they're doing a series of those for like Van Halen records. We talked about this on the show already. I don't get it. What are you going to get? It sounds like the last thing you'd want to do is hear more detail on a Van Halen record. Wow, listen to that average drumming and that substandard bass playing. So, because sometimes there's a group like Red Hot Chili Peppers, great guitarist, great bass player, great drummer, awful singer. Three are strong, one is weak. Conversely, Van Halen, great guitar player, terrible bass player, terrible drummer. Truly terrible singer. There's only one good member of the band. That should be another discussion for another day. Because today we're talking about double albums. 201-332-3484 is the number. You get in on the action. And we got some other conversation. We're going to be talking about wrestling and all sorts of stuff. So get ready. Because that clock on the wall tells me that it's best show time, right? You ready for the best show? Who's ready for the best? I'm not going to keep doing that. That's all for me. All right. Right? Right? You get it? You get it? How we doing? Yeah. How we doing? How we doing? How we doing? Yeah, welcome back to the best show. We just heard two songs there. One is tied to our topic. One is tied to our topic. One is "This Ain't No Picnic" by the Minutemen. Double Nickels on the Dime. Was that 84? Some good stuff, Jack. Came out in 84, I think 84, right? Come on. Come on, Tom. What's going on with your bleeping brain here? Yeah, that's way up there for top double albums, because that's the topic tonight. What's the best double album? And then we heard something that had nothing to do with double albums to start the show. Something was stuck in my head for all of today, which comes from an EP, the opposite of a double album. It was The Breeders with Safari from the EP of the same name. That's some good stuff, man. Good stuff. But now it's best show time, and here we are doing the best show the way we do it each and every Tuesday night. And the phone number is 201-332-3484. And it's time to talk to you about the double albums. Let's do it to it. Pat, anybody calling? Anybody?
I wish I could say yes.
Oh, no.
I wish I could say that there were five calls on hold.
Oh, but you can't, can you?
I can tell you that.
Look at that. Look at that. You got me again. It's April Fool's all over again.
1, 2, 3, 4, skip 5, 6.
There we go. Look at that. Oh, my goodness. It's like April Fool's. You got me again. Another April Fool's. I feel like an April Fool all over again. Throw me one, Pat, please.
Here you go.
Hello, best show.
Hey, Tom. It's Macro from Seattle.
Macro from Seattle. Now, this is a longtime caller to the best show. This is a classic caller. This is somebody who's been there through thick and thin and is still here, and I appreciate it. Thank you, Macro. How are you doing these days?
I'm doing fine. I'm just thinking of ways to just stay at home and have fun, so I avoid not getting sick, basically. So
that's the way to do it. You can avoid the coronavirus by staying at home. So, yeah, that's the way to do it. Is that what you're doing? Yeah. What do you do for food? What do you do for food?
I mean, I head out to the supermarket across the street, and I've just been learning how to make my own recipes. So,
and what's your go-to recipe now? What's the one that you feel you could now, if you had to make a fast dinner and somebody's coming over, you could put together and you know they'd be impressed?
Hopefully they'll be impressed with my breakfast burritos, which are all day. But it's since I'm vegan now, I'm doing this tofu scramble, which okay. I've got nailed down with the spices and everything. So, yeah.
How spicy do you make your breakfast burritos?
Not too spicy.
Just enough. A little kick. Give it a little kick. A little zip. A little zing. A zing.
Yeah. A zing. Yeah, exactly.
A little zing.
Yeah.
That sounds like the way to do it. And so you're saying that breakfast is served all day at your place.
For the past 2 weeks, it has, yeah.
Okay. Do you think? I wonder if the cooks at like a diner, when they have breakfast served all day, are they just like Are they bummed about that, or is that good because it's fast to just make it make a, an omelet? You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder where they stand on that.
I never worked at a place that served breakfast all day, but I mean, aside from eggs and bread, like, they're pretty common things to get. So I'm guessing it's easier than a lot of dinner things. So I don't know, though.
Well, you know what we do know is that you called in because I'm assuming you have something for the topic.
I do.
And the topic is best double album.
Yes.
And look, I also want to say this. We're talking about best double album. Of course, everybody can say Exile on Main Street, White Album. Let's try to crack it open. Let's get some non-rock things in there so we can all expand our collective horizons if we all get a little too rocky. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Do you want me to choose a non-rock one?
No. I'm just saying in general, if you've got non-rock ones to call in about, call in with them is all I'm saying. But I want to hear the rock ones too. That's where I live. I live on the rock side of the street, but I like going to different neighborhoods too. So what do you got, Macro?
So I got,
let me just say one other thing. I'm so sorry to keep cutting off. I'm not here. On the whole, this is a positive experience on the whole tonight. I'm not here to tell you why you're wrong about the double album you like so much, unless there's going to be a few cases of that. But beyond that, on the whole, it's a supportive thing for your pitches. There's going to be a few that don't make the cut, in my opinion. But on the whole, I'm going to be supportive and I want to hear what you got. There we go.
Alrighty. So I chose Yeti by Amandul 2.
Amandul 2, the kind of, how would you describe it? Is it crazy? It's kind of kraut rocky, Amandul 2.
Right? Yeah. I mean, they're under that umbrella, like German psychedelia, basically.
Yeah, but the whole thing is they've never been pure. They've never been as in line with when you have your noise and your cans and your clusters and your all those. They always had a little bit of a kind of a shambling. Dirty hippie vibe, but in a good way.
Yeah, they're closer to like Jefferson Airplane and the Stooges, whereas Can and Noi, they're more Teutonic, basically. That's more about minimalism and the rhythm. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. That's a good way of putting it. So you put Yeti up there. That's a good choice. And when did you first come across that album?
Like in the mid to late 90s is when all of these great, like especially German psychedelic albums just finally got CD reissues because my taste hadn't evolved to that point yet. And if it had, like those records were hard to find at the time. So I had the CD for the longest time, but a number of years back, I finally found an original. So that made me very happy.
Mm-hmm. How much did you drop for that original?
it wasn't as much as it is now, thankfully. But at the time, it was quite a bit of money. So
mm-hmm. You can flash it around. How much you pay?
It would be the cost of 3 new albums today.
You dropped about $75.
Yeah, it's close to that.
80. Oh. You dropped $90 on it. It was a $90 record.
No, you got it right the second time.
Okay, well, you dropped $80 on it. That's fine. Oh my god, that's a steal for most things. Be proud of that. Be proud of that, Macro. Don't run from that number. Lean into it. Well, that's a good call. You got any other ones?
I could go on, but I'll just mention a couple. I'll do a non-rock one.
Okay.
Songs in the Key of Life by Stevie Wonder. Yeah,
Stevie Wonder. That's a great album. I mean, it's funny because sometimes when people do their albums that are like, because a double album is a statement album for people. It's mm-hmm. kind of like you're saying, I'm going to put everything I'm interested in into this record.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here to let you know about our latest episode of Office Hours Live.
Office Hours is great fun.
With the great John Early and Theda Hamill.
Very handsome. Thank you.
They're here to talk about their new movie, Stress Positions. And we just had a wonderful time. There was a lot of laughter and joy. Don't believe me? Well, listen for yourself on the podcast app of your choice. You're not going to want to miss a second. That's at Office Hours Live at the podcast app of your choice.
Bum, 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 bum.
I love Vic and Doug, and I love drinking my wine.
And it's kind of like a statement. They're statement albums.
Yeah, there's some that are kind of like buffet double albums where it's like, we're going to give you a little bit of everything we're into, as you just said. And you can listen to all of it. You can listen to part of it, whatever. Here it is.
Mm-hmm. And my favorite thing on a double album, side three. Side three is usually when people start getting weird. Side three gets a little odd on a lot of double albums.
That's the sidelong improvisation track. So yeah, that check.
Yeah. Whether your Game Theory and their side three of Lolita Nation, or you're talking about MGMT and Siberian Breaks taking up side three of Congratulations, it's always a fun. Side three is always the X factor. Not always, but often is on the double album. The funny thing about the Stevie Wonder record is that it's kind of like one scooch outside of my favorite spot for Stevie Wonder.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still a great album. So, you know what I mean? Like it's not what I would say is top of the heap for his catalog, but it's amazing. I like the one, I like Music From My Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I like that. Yeah. Let me look at the list here. That also, just, I'm trying to remember.
50 years old. Yeah.
What's that?
The Music of My Mind just turned 50.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. And Talking Book and just like stuff like, you know, like that's really, it's, I like the early, late 60s into early 70s, like when he's taking control of his business and really making a major statement is my favorite. That's my favorite Stevie Wonder stretch. And when he gets a little more pro, a little slicker, kind of around Songs of the Key of Life is, you know, look, it's still great. I'm not going to put it down. Of course not.
Yeah.
Well,
what you think of Journey into the Secret Life of Plants.
Less so on that one. That's definitely that's one I've never been able to. Yeah. That's never did anything for me.
I really like it now.
I'm not a plant though. I'm not a plant. That's the problem. I'm not a plant. I'm human.
Fair enough.
If only I was a plant, I think I'd understand that album. That album would work for me a lot more. One of the best things about Man, I'm so sorry. I'm rambling. Songs of the Key of Life is, that it gave it, it cleared the path for, of course, you can say it.
The journey, the journey, even secret life. For Will Smith.
Wild Wild West. It's got I Wish on it.
Right.
So the way I look at that is Stevie went, put the baseball on top of the T-ball stand, and the baseball had written on it, I Wish. And then who walks up to the plate? Big Willie. And he says, Wild Wild West, and then knocks that thing out of the park.
Yeah, Will Smith is kind of the Kevin Bacon of the universe these days.
Kind of, yeah. Well, Macro, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. No, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
This is a great call, you rat bastard. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. There he goes. There he goes. Look at that. Another call, please. Hello, Best Show.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. To whom am I speaking?
This is Colette from Athens.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're guess what? Everybody want to talk about double albums. We're going to keep going on that, but not right now. Unless, Colette, you must have an opinion on your favorite double album. What would it be?
I do have a, my pick would be Outkast, The Love Below. Speaker box.
Yeah, sure.
Box. Super good. But this WrestleMania was a double album. It was two nights.
Well, first of all, let me congratulate you on a segue that was, that's a top notch segue. What's his face? Wood never didn't make segues like that. That's his face. Job Bluth didn't do a segue the way you just did a segue. So yeah, I want to say this, Colette. First of all, I saw a lot of it. I saw a lot of it this time.
Yeah.
So WrestleMania, which is a thing that happens once a year, which is like the big event for the wrestle club of WWE, World Wrestling Enterprises. Is that what it's called? Entertainment.
Yes.
Because they had to admit it was fake in court. Which sounded like an actually like a liberating moment, to be honest. So then,
like that did happen, but
so WrestleMania happens once a year, and this year it happened in Texas.
Yep, and in Dallas, Texas.
Was it at the Cowboys venue?
I believe so. There were a lot of stars, and like the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders were there. So I don't think that they moved from place to place. They just
stayed. I don't think the Cowboys cheerleaders are, it's not a remote unit. I think they generally promote the Cowboys wherever the Cowboys do their thing. So it's there. It was Saturday and it was Sunday. And now I got an invite to go to someone's house and watch potentially both nights. And guess what I did? I went both nights.
Yes.
I saw two nights of this garbage. And all I need to say, let's go one night at a time. Saturday night, the big show Saturday night with what were the big events on Saturday night?
Stone Cold Steve Austin wrestled his first match in 19 years,
which I want to talk about other things from Saturday night then we will get to that, because there might not be any show left by the time I'm done talking about whatever that was. that might take up the whole night, but let's give it a shot.
Well, the good match that happened that night.
Yeah.
Was, Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch for the WWE Women's Championship.
Okay.
Did you see that one?
I think I came in on that one.
Okay. It was like one of the rare WWE matches that was like a legitimately emotional moment. Mm-hmm. Belair is like someone that people really like in WWE. She won the title at WrestleMania last year, but lost it in like 8 seconds at SummerSlam. So people were really mad about that. Okay. So her winning felt really great. There was Cody Rhodes versus Seth freaking Rollins. That's his full name.
Okay.
That's the guy. There was one dude who was like wearing kind of like lace garters, which was actually a pretty good look. And the other guy came in dressed like George Washington.
Okay.
And he had a cool neck tattoo. And he had been away from WWE for like 6 years, and it's supposedly a big deal that he's back. And, like, you know, he talks a lot about his dad not winning the title, so he's going to win the title for Dusty Rhodes now. And that's his thing. Ronda Rousey lost, which was WWE saying trans rights. Very nice.
What was that saying?
They were saying trans rights.
What's that?
Oh, Ronda Rousey is a pretty infamous transphobe.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. For whatever reason, I did not know that. So that was I saw that match, and that was
yeah.
I don't know. It seemed like, first of all, it seemed like Ronda Rousey was taking some makeup tips from Julia Fox there with the...
It's pretty brutal.
Yeah. But look, whatever. I'm not going to judge people's appearances, at least not at this point in the discussion. I think that might come in a little bit. So then you get to the main event.
Yeah.
The main event is ostensibly a talk show. And I'm like, well, this thing's wrapping up. I guess I'll watch some of this talk show and then hit the road. So then, 75 minutes later, the talk show was over. So who's doing the talk show on this?
The talk show host is Kevin Owens, who is a French-Canadian wrestler who wears, like, you know, cool t-shirts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. So then he comes out. This is how it works. I want to say this. Overall note about wrestling, clearly they assume wrestling fans have nowhere better to be. I've never seen anything take more time to get to every moment than what I saw this past weekend. I never saw more. Transylvania has less vamping than this WrestleMania did. Thank you. I appreciate it. It was. So this guy comes into the ring, Owen Klein. What's his name?
Kevin Owens.
Kevin Owens comes into the ring, and he's got two chairs that look like they're from Office Max set up in the chair. Just two of those, like, okay office chairs that you'd buy, being like,
yeah,
like the kind of thing you buy if you cheap out on an office chair, and then suddenly you're like, my back hurts. It's like, yeah, because you bought some garbage chair. You should have just gone a little bit more. You're going to be in that chair every day. Why'd you cheap out at the last second? So these two cheapo stands are a thing, and a couple easels that have, like, what was written on them? The Owen Klein talk show? What was it?
Yeah, the KO show.
The KO show. So then he goes, I got a guest coming on the show. And this is, I don't like this guy. And we're where he lives, which is Texas. So I'm going to bring my guest. I'm going to interview him on my talk show. Stone Cold Steve Austin. So then that took 10 minutes to get to that moment, that point where he said, I'm going to interview this guy. So then Stone Cold Steve Austin, who is this fossil basically from yesteryear in wrestling, right? He's how yeah. long since he wrestled?
19 years, 2003.
2003 is the last time this guy, and when he wrestled then, it seems like not so hot. I'm sure he was on his last legs then.
It was time for him to retire. He wrestled The Rock. It was like their third WrestleMania match, and it's pretty legendary. But mm-hmm. yeah, he had.
And who won that match? The Rock won that match?
The Rock did. The Rock did.
Yeah. Because they were passing the torch.
That's what you're supposed to do. Yeah. Except for now in WWE, where like you're supposed to get your ass kicked by someone who's like four times older than you are.
So I'm watching this thing. Stone Cold Steve Austin shows up, and I'm trying to think who I can best equate this that he looks like. Well, he looks like that guy from Blade Runner who was like, time to die. The guy who was always in like, always in things. He was like the, you know that guy, that actor?
Yeah, isn't that Rucker Hauer?
No, it's not Rucker Hauer. It's the other guy. The guy who was also in like The Player and other things.
Yeah.
That guy with a shaved head. So he.
Yeah, I see that.
Starts walking down the ramp. And then he gets on basically a scooter. What was it? Like a golf cart, like a military, a reinforced golf cart.
Yeah.
And proceeds to drive it 2 miles an hour as if this is the most impressive thing anyone has ever seen, that they just have this golf cart here for him to drive around on. It's not impressive. He's driving around this golf cart going so slow, taking the turns so easy. He finally takes another 10 minutes for this guy to get to the ring. So we're 20 minutes in at this point. Then he gets out, gets in the ring. The guy, Owen Klein, starts doing some Texas baiting, saying, you know, how dumb people in Texas are because they're in Texas. It's like, look, I always like those moments. When you just straight up troll somebody.
Classic.
Yeah. So then
bring up the sports team.
Yeah. So then the other thing is like Steve Austin, because I guess now it's like this isn't a normal wrestling thing. So he like curses. Like he says, yeah. Like, you know, he says like the S and AH as if people are going to be, oh my God. Like, does anybody think there's any value attached to cursing in a shocking regard? No, nobody cares.
Yeah, that's when there is.
Well, in the real world, there isn't.
That's true. In the real world, there's not.
I'm just saying in the real world, it's not impressive for some guy to start calling somebody an SOB and then say, throw the S around. And the reason I'm not saying it is because I'm just trying to do this a family friendly show, unlike WrestleMania, apparently. So then this Owen Klein starts saying to the guy, I'm going to fight you. I brought you here for different reasons. I want to fight you. I want to wrestle you. Now, you haven't wrestled in 19 years. I want to wrestle you. And then they start this match. First of all, neither of them take their shirt off. It's like two guys at the pool who are just like, oh, I'm going to swim with my shirt on. I'm fine. Which, again, I'm not judging it. You don't want to take your shirt off? I get it. I don't like taking my shirt off particularly. But it's wrestling. People are kind of expecting some shirts to come off.
Yeah.
So then they start this match and they're punching, bonking each other, bopping each other over the heads. And it is a half hour of that. A half hour of these two. Now, is the other guy old also?
No, he's not.
He's not, but he certainly acted like he was old.
I think he was working down to the level of Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, no, he was trying to, it's like playing basketball against an 8-year-old. You can't block every shot. You drive the kid nuts. So this guy is being so like courteous in his thing, acting like this guy's like really hurting him, and they're throwing each other around, like quote unquote throwing each other around. The thing spills up and down the arena aisles. They're slapping each other and shoving each other. And then finally, what's Stone Cold Steve Austin's big move?
The Stone Cold Stunner.
The Stone Cold Stunner. So he does the Stone Cold Stunner on this guy like a couple times, right?
Yeah, a few times.
He does it a few times. The Stone Cold Stunner. And then he starts doing and I'm not joking about this. After this guy gets laid out, for the next 20 minutes, all that happens is Stone Cold Steve Austin goes to different corners of the ring, catches his own beer, which is being thrown into him, and opens it, and kind of just goes like, with it, with most of the beer being on his shirt. Over and over and over. A good 20 minutes of watching someone pour beer on their own shirt. And this crowd is going bonkers watching that. And I guess he has some trash beer or something. What's his beer called?
I think that he has an IPA, and I think that he has like an American lager, like it's like Steve Austin's Broken Skull American lager. Times during the match.
Have you tried it?
Oh, I'm sober. Like, no way. You're sober. I'm going back for that.
You sure you don't want to go out in a blaze of glory with some Stone Cold? Look, I don't know, sober, not sober. No one should be. It seems like that stuff seemed like. It seemed like I wasn't even near it, and it seemed just like bad, cheap beer. And I don't like beer.
It's good for your shirt.
What's that?
It's good for the fun of your shirt.
His shirt was soaking wet from beer.
It's like a waterfall running off of it.
Yeah. He was drinking these beers, pouring them all over his shirt. His shirt soaked. And he was like drinking beer during the match and like spitting it on the guy and like spitting it on people. Just spitting his beer everywhere. And it was like a commercial. It was like a beer commercial for the next 20 minutes. Am I exaggerating?
No.
No. It was literally the whole show was him popping open a beer. Pouring it into his mouth, like, but most of it spilled on his shirt over and over and over. And that was night number one of WrestleMania.
Yep. Wikipedia says that went 13 minutes and 55 seconds.
The beer. The beer part of it.
The match.
No, there's no way. I think that match might still be going on right now, actually. I think it's like Dunkirk, where my reality is that was a week long, but now I'm doing this at the same time that happened. There's a conflicting timelines happening here.
Yeah.
So then night two, I get back in there And I'm like, well, this better deliver, because that was pure garbage, what I just witnessed. It was maybe the dumbest thing I'd ever witnessed in my life. And I've seen some pretty dumb stuff. So then, first match I see is, what would it have been? It was before the one you know I loved.
Bobby Lashley versus Almost.
Yeah, I saw that. That seemed functional. Seemed perfectly fine.
Yeah.
So then that happens. And then I hear, guess what? Johnny Knoxville is going to wrestle some other dude. And what was this guy's name?
Sami Zayn.
Now, what is your opinion of Sami Zayn?
I think Sami Zayn is one of the best professional wrestlers of his generation, and I think that he and Johnny Knoxville had one of the five best WrestleMania matches of all time.
I want to say this. For me, look, I've seen less wrestling than you have, obviously, Colette, but I want to say this. Johnny Knoxville wrestling Sami Zayn was so entertaining. I could not handle how entertaining it was. I flipped out because I guess they've been having some back and forth over the last bunch of months leading to this. So Johnny Knoxville comes out, and there is a cosmic melding of moments when you hear the opening of the Jackass theme as played by the Minutemen, which is one of the artists responsible for one of the best double albums of all time, Double Nickels on the Dime, the Minutemen. When you hear playing over the PA with all these chuds, basically 70,000 chuds in attendance, and suddenly the Minutemen have met Vince McMahon and the chuds in the same moment, I was like, this is, as Art Bell would say, the quickening. The quickening has begun. Humankind is in fast ascent. The computers will take over soon, but this was a good signal. So then it starts. And Johnny Knoxville comes out dressed like some old-timey wrestler. Like, he's dressed like he stopped off at Target and bought whatever he thought would look good for wrestling. Some goggles, like long sleeve shirt, like some sweatpants, some like Chuck Taylors, I think he had on.
Yeah, the goggles are so interesting to me.
Yeah. So he comes out like that. He starts wrestling this guy, Sami Zayn. And first of all, Sami Zayn's, they start pulling props out from under the ring. They each have props hidden under the ring. A table covered in mouse traps, for example. Old-fashioned metal garbage can, the kind of garbage can they don't make anymore. I think those are only those are only made for wrestling at this point. I think someone said that at the what's that?
The boot that's on a fulcrum was good.
There was a boot, like a crotch kicker, like basically a boot on a fulcrum that when you pull the lever back toward you, the boot goes out the other way and gives you a good womp in the crotch. So then Johnny Knoxville started to get the tar beat out of him early. Like, oh no, this is not going to go well. He's going to lose. I'm worried. But then who enters the ring? Chris Pontius in full party boy. He rips his tear away pants and shirt, and suddenly he's in the bow tie and the speedo dancing around. And then the Sami Zayn knocks him out. And you're like, oh no, what's going on? And you can also see on the sideline, Jasper and Dark Shark from the new movie and Jeff Tremaine, the director of the Jackass movies, are there. And they're like helping drag props out and whatnot. So then Johnny Knoxville gets his old fashioned garbage can, takes the two lids, clonks them the way you go bong, like cymbals in an orchestra, like over his head. And then the Sami Zayn goes to pull under the ring to pull something else out. And then he goes flying backwards. Like, what just happened to him? Well, guess what? Bleeping Wee Man was under there the whole time. Wee Man was under the ring. So Wee Man comes out, starts getting into it. And what does Wee Man do? He picks this dude up. And what would you call that move that he did?
Oh, he did a full body slam.
He did a full body slam. He body slammed this dude. I couldn't contain my joy at that point. But that wasn't even it. It had just begun. Because there's a point when this Sami Zayn goes up on the turnbuckle, getting ready to jump down and do some power move and clonk Johnny Knoxville, who's laid out on his back. But then Johnny Knoxville's hand goes up and you're like, wait, what's going on? And he presses a button that apparently triggers some weird sparks that go off behind the guy on the top of the turnbuckle, which sends him falling. Then they're chasing after him. And then the hand, the giant hand from the movie, slaps him on the side. And then he gets hit in the crotch with the crotch kicker. But then, as if that's not enough, they bring out a giant mouse trap. A human-sized mouse trap. And this is after Sami Zayn flew onto the table full of mouse-sized mouse traps. So he ends up getting caught in a human-sized mousetrap and was truly stuck inside that thing for 5 minutes past the point that he should have been stuck inside of it. I thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And it was so joyous. And I said, if that's what wrestling was actually like, I'd be in bad shape because I'd be watching wrestling every week. I'd be hooked like one of you poor souls who are just signed up, apparently did some lifelong contract with this thing, and you're trapped forever because you love it, but you hate it at the same time, but you still love it. You're trapped by it. I get it. I got things I'm trapped by. I keep coming back for over and over again. Look at me and CeCe's Pizza.
I think that's probably the most apt comparison.
I went there 3 times. I'm just like, first time. Saw the commercials on TV. Let's go to CeCe's Pizza. Boy, that was terrible. They finally opened. That was when I was in North Carolina. I see one. Hey, CeCe's Pizza's in New Jersey now. Well, I guess I'll check that out. Boy, that was terrible. See a commercial on TV. CeCe's has a new menu. Well, I got to check that out. Go there. Well, still terrible. Might be new. What's not new is how terrible it is. That's my CeCe's Pizza is my pro wrestling. Then I watched a match where it was like a whole bunch of ladies were fighting each other, including one who had a mask on for some reason, Carmella.
Yeah, she's protecting her face because it's beautiful or something.
Okay. I gotta say this. I was just like, I think I like Carmella. She seems cool. I have no idea. I like that mask looked like a, it was just like one of those like hydration masks you'd put on or something.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So Carmella, and then Carmella lost though.
Mm-hmm.
Then I stopped watching at that point.
Aw.
Yeah, sorry.
You missed out on so much.
What did I miss?
You missed out on the wrestling debut of Pat McAfee. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Pat McAfee seems to be some sort of announcer.
He's an announcer with WWE, but he's a former NFL punter and current podcasting menace.
That's right. He's the one who gives Aaron Rodgers a platform for his awesome takes on things. And I heard Vince McMahon came back out. He's like 99 years old, but he came out and fought or something.
Yeah, after Pat McAfee beat Austin Theory, who was like Mr. McMahon. I don't know why I'm giving him the honorific.
It's so funny you say Mr. McMahon. I was at this thing, and my friend Tony said, he was recounting something. He said, Mr. McMahon did this. I was just like, Tony, can I ask you a favor, please? You stop calling him Mr. McMahon.
That's been his name forever, though.
What?
That's been his name in wrestling forever. He's not Vince.
Oh, I don't care. It sounds awful. It sounds weirdly subservient. The way people talk about Robert Kraft, the owner of the Patriots. Well, Mr. Kraft said this and Mr. Kraft said that. And it's just like, you're just like, we're so reverent with this guy, Mr. Kraft. The guy owns a team. He hasn't done anything.
Yeah.
So
McMahon has wrestled a couple times.
So when as you say, Mr. McMahon came out.
Terrible when you say it.
Were you excited? You were like, ooh, Mr. McMahon. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm picking on you like that. Did you expect him to come out?
Yeah, I did. I did. I expected him to come out. But every time I see him, like lately, like over the past 4 years, it's like staring in the face of the eventuality that we all die. That's what Mr. McMahon looks like, if I can call him Mr. in this instance.
Yeah, he looks amazing and not amazing at the same time.
He's stuck between worlds.
It's a unique phenomenon to see him. And I'm looking at pictures now. Apparently he was wearing some sort of wrestler, some like referee stripes. Or something?
No, he was wearing normal clothes and then he took them off and had a tank top on.
But was the tank top striped?
No. He wasn't the referee at all. He was just at ringside observing. And then when McAfee won.
Oh, I see a picture now. Yeah, there he is.
Match.
Well, look, Vince McMahon is how old is he?
He's 76, I think.
Well, for a 70, God bless him for a 70. It's also God bless him. It's just like, this guy's a legitimate bad human. I mean, look, I say God bless him in the colloquial sense. But he's jacked beyond belief. But he just looks uncomfortable in his own skin.
Have you seen what happened?
No.
Okay, Tom. I'm going to send a video of part of what happened to the Best Show Twitter account because you need to see it. Okay. It involves Stone Cold Steve Austin. But before Stone Cold Steve Austin got involved, he was challenged to a match by Pat McAfee and accepted and did all kinds of weird stuff with Pat for like 3 minutes. Like he threw clotheslines that looked like a grandma was throwing them. And like punted a ball into Pat's stomach, which was actually kind of cute.
I heard that actually he did like some move that they actually like seemed to be like laughing because it was so bad.
That's what I am sending to the Best Show account right now.
Thank you for that. Yes.
Hopefully that works. But yeah, after Pat McAfee lost to a 76-year-old man, Steve Austin's music hit again, and he took a million years to get out to ringside and did the same thing that he did with Kevin Owens, only he did it with Vince McMahon, who is his, like, you know, his rival of like 30 years at this point, since like 1996. And Vince McMahon, you know, he's like an idiot, so he trusts Steve Austin when he hands him one of his terrible beers. And while he's drinking it, Steve Austin kicks him in the gut and delivers the Stone Cold Stunner, which you saw
to Vince McMahon.
Yeah, he delivers one to 76-year-old Vince McMahon, and it is amazing. I don't know if you've got it pulled up yet, but I think you'll like it.
Let me see. You sent it to the Best Show Twitter?
To the Twitter account, yeah.
Yeah, let's see. Funny thing, I don't do the Best Show Twitter. That's on me. Some guy named Keith handles it.
I didn't know that. Let me see.
Sharpling. I'm going to retweet it. Hang on one sec.
Thanks, Pat. Now, this... But let me just say this about wrestling. It certainly seems like you're all having a great time with it.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like you might want to schedule a few things to do in between these things, because there's a good 45 minutes between each event that seems like that time could be put to some good use.
Mr. McMahon trying to get away, but Austin stuns McMahon.
Wait, hold on.
Mr. McMahon trying to get away, but Austin stuns McMahon.
Yeah, that was not a wrestling move. That was a... I don't know what that was. That was like somebody dropping a grocery bag.
Yeah.
Or something. That was not a human that he did that move to. It was a grocery bag.
That's the worst one since he Stone Cold stunned Donald Trump, like at WrestleMania 23. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This is so, look,
you have fun. Did I enjoy it? Yeah, I enjoyed it. I had fun watching the wrestling stuff. The Johnny Knoxville thing is one of the best things imaginable. I'd recommend that to anybody who wants to have a good time. The rest of it, I don't know so much. It might not be for me.
Probably not.
No. Rank it on a scale of 1 to 10, please, Colette, WrestleMania for this year.
I thought it was an 8, and I think it's one of the 3 best WrestleManias ever.
Oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
None of the other WrestleManias had Johnny Knoxville on it.
No, that's true. But WrestleMania... the greatest moment in it shouldn't be someone who isn't a part of wrestling. You know what I mean?
He'll be in the Hall of Fame eventually.
But it should be like, they should bring what's-his-face back for it. Hillbilly Jim. Why don't they bring him back?
I don't want to drag this on any longer than it should, but the other notable thing that happened was The Undertaker did a Hall of Fame speech.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with The Undertaker.
Yeah, he's an old ghost or something, right?
Yeah, he's a spooky ghost.
Yeah.
And he did a speech in a Righteous Gemstones looking suit with a Garth Brooks microphone and told the audience that they could succeed in life if they followed his mental moves. And usually these things are like, you know, tear-stained, like, love letters to the fans that sustain them along the way. But The Undertaker's out there talking about how perception is reality.
Yeah, so he took a page out of Will Smith's acceptance speech of just like, let's Pedro Almodovar said, did I say that right? Yeah, I said it right. Said Almodovar, I'm sorry. He said that Will Smith's acceptance speech was not unlike a cult leader. he said that was not an award winner. That was not unlike a cult leader. And now it seems like the Undertaker seems like these guys, they get that platform and they decide this is their moment to launch their cult.
Oh, he said that the three most important people in his life in order were his wife, Jesus Christ, and Vince McMahon. That's the other notable thing.
He said in that order?
In that order.
Well, that's, and look, whatever you think about Jesus Christ, I'm going to say this. If you're going to put Jesus Christ on your list, you kind of got to put him first.
Yeah.
You don't get to go, yeah, Jesus Christ is so important to me, but he's coming in second on this list. I think that means you might want to brush up on your Christianity. I think you kind of got to put Jesus in the number one spot. It's weird.
But yeah, great WrestleMania. Really fun weekend. I had a good time with it, mostly because I was trash talking it on Twitter. WrestleManias aren't, to answer your question about non-wrestlers being the focal point, I don't think that you can measure a WrestleMania by like how good the show was. Mm-hmm. You have to measure a WrestleMania by how many like tweets you get out of it.
That's not how it works. that's shifting the burden completely off of them. And at one of the matches, someone else drove like a car 1 mile an hour also. I'm just like, are people that impressed by just the existence of vehicles? Like, the whole point of like having some insane sports car is that you're supposed to tear ass up and down the road 100 miles an hour. Not like, look at this fancy car. Watch me drive it 1 mile an hour inside. As if driving it inside is some big, oh my God, that car is inside the world's biggest football stadium. Okay.
They better not leave it running.
Yeah, that was, well, Colette, I appreciate the reporting.
It's my pleasure. I am so happy that you saw it. I think that your take was more fair and balanced than mine. Do you have a rating for it? Like, what would you rate it?
I honestly can't. I have no frame of reference for what that was. I remember when I was working on the show Monk, a writer, The Sopranos was wrapping up at that point, and there was the final episode was happening, and then this one writer who I'm not going to name came in and said, yeah, I watched the finale of Sopranos. Yeah, it wasn't any good. I thought it sucked. And it's like, wait, you don't watch the Sopranos though? It's like, no, that was the first episode I ever saw. It's like, well, please don't. Like, please, why? First of all, why would anyone start with the final episode of something? It's the weirdest thing I ever heard in my life. Start with the series finale of it. And then to come in and say it wasn't good when everybody else is like, oh, I liked it. What about this? What about that? Be like, yeah, I didn't think it was any good. Well, did you even know that that one guy was Tony? Like, you sure you even know their names?
That was how I got into Breaking Bad, though.
You started late?
I started at the end. I started with the finale.
Yeah, okay. Well, that show's stupid, though.
Yeah. It was a fun kind of stupid, but I like wrestling, so.
Yeah. That would be, so what if Walter White came out in a wrestling thing? It was just like, oh. What if it was Walter White and Tuco came out? And you might not know Tuco. Tuco was a character not from the finale. Colette.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, white men. Yeah,
Todd. Todd came out.
Yeah.
Oh, Colette, thank you for the call.
Thank you, Tom. I'll talk to you soon.
I'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Yep. Bye.
Bye. Anybody here on the show watch WrestleMania? Pat? Mike?
Yeah, Jason, I saw some bits of it.
You saw some bits? You like
it? Yeah. No, I pretty much agree with your overall commentary.
Yeah, it's boring. It was so boring. The amount of time they were taking.
Lots of loud talking. You know, that goes on continuously.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't touched on the commentary. That is sort of endless.
Oh, yeah.
And the mangling of the language. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's on the Fox and Friends level. You know, it's like you could. I had to turn the sound down at certain points. I couldn't take any more of it. I watched certain things with it on mute.
There was one point where one of the announcers literally said the phrase while they're wrestling, said, "Oh my God, please no," which stuck in my head. You don't say. That's what you say when you're on the Titanic.
My favorite.
At a wrestling. Oh my God, please no. Yeah.
My favorite was when the intimidator fails to intimidate, he becomes the intimidated. I'm like, what? It's like, and yeah, I mean, that one just jumped to the top for me. And that's
when the intimidator fails to intimidate, they become the intimidated.
Yes.
I mean, it's not wrong.
No, it's not wrong, but I mean, stupid. It's just like the clanging, you know, the echoes, you know, just say.
Oh, they're just filling. They're just filling with word sounds.
Yeah, they're vibrating the air. Yeah.
Yeah. These are not valid. There's no value to the words being said.
And it was a rotating cast. So like one came in after the other and they were just as bad. You know, it was like no improvement in any of the commentary. Another general observation is that, you know, I kept looking for the audience to see some kids, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, I grew up on it, you know, when I was a kid, actually, you know, I was from the very beginning when Vince McMahon was doing this he was on a UHF channel in Philadelphia and he was like the stiffest announcer you could imagine. We used mm-hmm. to laugh at him, you know, me and my brothers, we thought it was hilarious. This stiff guy, you know, the way his delivery, but you know, we had fun with it when you're a kid, you know, it's like, it was like a sort of a secret thing, you know, UHF channel. It was actually mm-hmm. on two Philadelphia channels, 29 and 17. And you know, and it was great. It's great for kids. And when I see the kids in the audience, they're having fun. You know, I think that's the way it should be.
So you saw the kids, you saw the kids there, both of them.
Yeah, you had to look hard.
Yeah, no, there's no kids there. It's all
there's all these slack-jawed guys in the front.
Yeah,
you know, blocking
the kids' views.
Yeah, exactly.
Taking up the seats.
Yeah, taking up the seats, blocking their view. Yeah. But you know, every once in a while they pan and you see a family. You know, the father and their kids, and you know, that's good. That's the way it should be. You know,
God forbid a child get a seat at this thing. At these wrestling matches.
I mean, I worked one. They had one a few years at MetLife Stadium, and I worked that event. And it was sort of a festive occasion. It was. I mean, it was kind of, everybody's in a good mood. People dress up for it. There were lots of costumes. I didn't really see a lot of that at this one. But when I did it, you know, people were dressed up as their favorite wrestlers. Half of them had these belts. They carried this thing around all day long. Like, who needs something to carry at an event? Like, you're going to lose it or, you know. But these guys were all carrying the thing.
I didn't even mention Logan Paul.
Yeah, well, you saw that, yeah.
Logan Paul got into it. First of all, this family, the Paul family, what is going on there? These two guys, one is a boxer now. The other one is a wrestler, like God knows what's going on in that house.
They're cashing in wherever they can cash in.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, you got to give them credit for that. They're cashing.
If it's any, I give them credit for nothing.
Where did they start? YouTube? Is that where they started?
Yeah, yeah. I give them credit for nothing. Well, the one was on a Nickelodeon show or a Disney show. Jake Paul was on a show, Aardvark something, or whatever it was. it, they have somehow become totally jacked up, and they have so much money, and it kind of shows that, it's kind of the worst of America when you see guys like that becoming immediate millionaires. And the only thing you have going for you, if you are trying to hold on to anything, is don't worry. They're not going to stay millionaires. It's like the only thing you've got it to keep going, to get out of bed in the morning, is to know that no, they'll be,
Are they the male Kardashians? Maybe they're the male Kardashians.
Maybe the Paul family is the Kardashian family. Yeah, maybe. Maybe they're the Ohio Kardashians. Well, Jason, you didn't watch any wrestling, right? You don't watch that stuff.
No, I haven't watched that stuff for years.
Guess too busy with 801.9 The Hawk.
Yeah, yeah, 801.9 The Hawk.
Which is his hit podcast, The Hawk.
Hit.
108.9
The Hawk. All caps, hit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say this, though, about 108.9 The Hawk.
Yeah.
Not following me on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
I'm following 108.9 The Hawk.
I knew you were.
Can't get me a refollow. Can't get me a refollow, okay, eh? Check it out. Am I following it? Check it out.
Okay, we'll find out right now. I got to talk to my street team.
Yeah, okay. Everybody has a street team over there. I'm the only one without a street team.
Hey, I don't have a street team.
Yeah, Pat don't have no street team. All right, Pat, give me another call, please. Hello, Besho.
Hello, Tom. You're at bastard. You did it.
There you go. That's what I like. Who's this?
This is Tyler from Kamloops, BC, Canada.
Welcome. Welcome. I know what you're going to pick. You're going to pick the Sloan album.
The Sloan album. Well, I've got my own ideas here, but that's a good contender.
It is. Never Hear the End of It is a great double album by Sloan. But what do you got?
Okay, so my favorite double album is, it's called 45 or 46 Songs That Weren't Good Enough to Make It Onto Our Other Records, and it is by NOFX.
Okay, look, NOFX, I don't know NOFX. That eluded me. It was not my scene. What should I know about NOFX? Teach me, please. Teach me. I'm here to learn.
Well, they're really nice guys. I actually got to go on tour with them eventually. This album
is your musician now. You're a musician now.
I am now. Yes.
What band you in?
We're called Let's Go.
Let's Go. Did we talk about this already?
No, this is my first time calling, and I'd just like to mention that I am a box set owner, and I'd like to invoke, if you don't mind.
Yes. Please invoke away. It buys you a cushion, but look, you're doing great. You're doing great. Anybody who bought the Sharpling and Worcester box set has been guaranteed a one-time extension on a call. I think that's what we guaranteed you, right?
Yes.
Without being hung up on. And now, and you were in no risk of that anyway. So you spent your thing, but it was so wisely spent because you feel secure that you're not going to get hung up on in the immediate future. So what do I need to, so you're in a band called Let's Go. What do you sound like?
I guess we sound kind of like NOFX.
Okay. Well, tell me what NOFX sound like. I truly don't know anything about NOFX.
Okay. They're like a skate punk, early 2000s. They started in the 80s, but they kind of defined the California skate punk sound along with bands like Bad Religion and Less Than Jake and stuff like that. So fast music, silly music.
What label are they on?
Fat Mike, the bassist from NOFX, actually owns the biggest independent record label in the world. It's called Fat Records. Fat Records,
yeah, that's what I thought. It's weird when you have these glaringly huge blind spots but that's one of them for me.
It's really interesting because a lot of the music that you guys are passionate about and talk about a lot, I've kind of got some of those same blind spots. But one time you were talking to KV and you guys were talking somehow about NoFX and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young at the same time, and he popped a joke on a NoFX title, like a pun. He said, "We're just doing it for the Cross," and that kind of my ears perked up for that one.
I didn't get that at all. That one went right over my head. What's the reference?
Well, NoFX has a song called "We're Doing It for the Cause."
Oh, see, KV, once again, KV, you done did it. You outsmarted me. So, okay, so that would be your choice for a double album, is the NoFX. Is it a compilation, or is it an all new album?
Well, the way they packaged it, they kind of imply that it's a bunch of their B-sides, but it's actually like a bunch of mostly short songs, like really short and catchy songs. There's a cover of a song called Vincent on there.
Vincent, not by Don McLean.
I think the one about Vincent Van Gogh, yeah.
The one that goes, "Starry, Starry Night."
Yes, beautiful song.
Yeah, so they do a version of that, and I'm assuming their version's maybe a little more hard-hitting than the original.
It is, but they kept the sensibilities, and you know the melodies and the vocals in that song are so beautiful. I think it comes through in its own way.
Okay. All right. I'm learning. Anything else, my friend?
No, I just wanted to say I'm going out snowboarding tomorrow. It's the last day of the season, so just want to give a shout out to Robert Cribby.
Well, why is it the last day of the season? Were they taking the snow away?
Oh yeah, they've no more fun. They come in with flamethrowers and just see you later.
I mean, the season ends when the snow ends. Is the snow going away now? Is that where it's at?
Yeah, it's getting pretty melty. We got about another 5 days, and then it's on to the summer stuff.
Okay. Well, yeah. I appreciate your call. Any other albums? Anything else you want to throw out real quick? No?
No, that's right. The only album, and thanks for taking my call. And the show has been great, and I love everything you guys are doing.
You're sweet.
And
you're
guys take care.
You're sweet. Thanks so much, buddy. Okay. Give me another call, please. Hello, Best Show. Hello.
Hey, Tom. This is Kyle from Portland.
Kyle from Portland. What's up, Kyle?
Not too much. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. What do you got? You got anything for the topic, Kyle from Portland? No? We lose you?
I am here. But your phone system.
What do you got for the topic, my friend?
One double album, which I have been curiously obsessed with for many years, is an album called Space Ritual by Hawkwind. Have you ever heard that one?
Have I ever heard that one? I got an all going accumulator. Of course I know Space Ritual. That's an all-time classic. That's a great call.
Very good. Very good.
Might be the best Hawkwind album too. Rare that a live album would be the best album for a band that was so good like that, but it might be.
I had basically discovered this album by accident. Mm-hmm. I took it out of the library maybe 15 or 20 years ago and loved the album, but the rest of the Hawkwind catalog seems very intimidating. Okay. It's hard for me to figure out where to go next, and I never really pursued it past this, so maybe you have some recommendations.
Well, that is a great... Okay, let's do it. I'll do it right now with you. Pulling up the Hawkwind discography. This is where you go, my friend. We're going to focus. This is what I'm going to tell you to focus on. You focus on 70s Hawkwind. You don't have to go past that. Maybe you do later. You don't have to right now, though. In Search of Space, you get on In Search with Space. In Search of Space, great album. Do-Re-Mi Fa-Sol La-Ti-Do is the album right after that. The run from In Search of Space to Quark, Strangeness, and Charm is kind of the way to go.
Awesome.
It's a good 5-6 year run that they had.
I will definitely check it out. It's always such a weird catalog, and for some reason there always seems to be like three versions of the band touring.
Oh, like, yeah, well, it's a mess. It's a mess what they have going on, because they, they have, like, there's the Hawk Lords and there's Hawk Wind, and it's all over the map. Just try to hang with the 70s stuff and start expanding out if you still want to hang in there, see what else is going on. Go to the Hawk Lords record after you go to those.
Awesome. I will definitely do that. Also wanted to mention, Tom, you caused some controversy on the Will Smith message boards because you said Will Smith didn't have a double album. But actually, he's the DJ, I'm the Rapper is a double album. I don't know if that counts for you in the Will Smith oeuvre.
No, it doesn't. No. You mean because the vinyl?
Yes. The actual version, the compact disc is a edited version of the vinyl.
You're fair. Look, of course, because the album has 18 tracks, the vinyl has 18 tracks, and CD has 17. They left off another special announcement, as we all know. because originally you listen to the thing and you're used to hearing, it ends with Human Video Game, of course. Everybody knows that. But the idea that when you get on side B and you go from Let's Get Busy, Baby, right into another special announcement on the vinyl, jumps right to Live at Union Square in November 1986.
Absolutely.
I know all this. When I talk about, I'm a Will Smith fan. The Fresh Prince is somebody. The Fresh Prince is not Will Smith. The Fresh Prince is a character Will Smith portrays. I run hot and cold with the Fresh Prince. Will Smith, when it says Will Smith on it, I'm all in. You tried to play a little gotcha, but you didn't get me.
I did.
You didn't.
You know, Tom, I just wanted to save your reputation, but you showed me.
Well, you're sweet. And why don't you go do this? Why don't you get one turntable and play Space Ritual on it, and get another turntable and play the vinyl for He's the DJ, I'm the Rapper.
Awesome. That would be quite the mix.
Yeah, it would be great. All right, buddy. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tom.
Okay, bye. Another call, please. Do we have more calls?
I'm here.
Welcome to the show. Best show. Hi, welcome.
Hi, Tom. It's Juan from Lysander, New York.
Juan from New York. Where in New York, you say?
From Lysander. We've been over this before.
Okay, well, I don't have my notes from that call in front of me.
I know. It was like 18 years ago.
So. Oh, it was 18 years ago. Oh, of course. Well, why? You literally said this. We went over this already. Yeah, when, what, 2006?
No, yeah. That was last year, wasn't it? Was it right?
Yeah. Maybe you don't know. I've taken a few calls since then. Come on, Juan. Help me out here a little bit. Oh. We went over this already.
Well, we did. You berated me about where I lived, but it doesn't matter.
I'm sure the reason I berated you is because you were presumptuous. So you probably went, hey, it's Juan from Lysander. And I was probably like, where's that? And you're like, in New York. And I'm like, no one's heard of it. Am I wrong?
Exactly. No, but you're absolutely correct. You're 100% correct.
That's how the conversation went, right? Because that's how it go. Look, maybe it didn't go that way. Usually those conversations go that way when somebody's just like,
hey, it's me from, and they go like, it's me from Northtown. And I'm like, wait, where's Northtown? And they're like, Idaho, you idiot. I'm like, I don't know small towns in Idaho.
Can I tell you something you probably never heard in all these years?
What's that?
You just, like, shook my brain up here. So a friend of mine who heard this call where you were berating me about life, reminded me just recently, for some reason, that somehow in this crazy call where you're looking at a map and naming streets around Lysander.
But I do remember this now. I completely remember this.
Somehow during this call, we got to talking about how how I was an orderly for Lou Gramm. That's just a meta. I hate that word. But anyway, my friend was just mentioning that to me for no reason recently.
And why is that? Because your friend was a.
No, because we were just talking about you and that show, and then we mentioned this call, and I said something about, you know, the word orderly. How much we love the word orderly.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know.
Well, if I got a movie for you, it's called Disorderlies.
Disorderly. Good. Yeah,
Disorderlies. You got to. There's more than one. You can check that out, because look, you're out in Lysander. You said right.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, maybe you check it out when you're out. I don't know where else you get movies out that way. I mean, I don't know. Plainville, maybe swing by Plainville. Jack's Reef. Meridian or Cato. Or South Hannibal.
We used to play track against them in high school, Cato Meridian.
Uh-huh.
Anyway.
I mean, I actually am going to be, it's actually fun. I want to announce, this is a good time for me to announce this, Juan. I will be doing a tour of Onondaga County, Onondaga County.
Onondaga.
Onondaga. I know, I was testing Onondaga. You. I'm doing a tour. Here, I'm going to give the dates now. August 1st, I'll be appearing in Lysander. August 2nd, I will be appearing in Pennellville. August 3rd, Sandridge. August 4th, Volney. August 5th, Lycoming. August 7th, Fernwood. I'll be in Howardville on August 9th and 10th. You can catch me at Marbletown on the 11th through the 14th. The 15th, I'll be in Alloway. 16th, Oaks Corners. I'll be in Phelps on the 17th. Howlett Hill, I'll be there for the 20th to the 23rd. Then you can catch me at Shepherd's Settlement on the 25th. I'll be at San Scatellus Falls on the 27th. The aforementioned Pennellville and Sandridge, I'm doing both on the 28th. Early show in Pennellville, late show in Sandridge. And then I'll be concluding the tour where was it again? Oh man, where was it? Point Rock. That's right.
Okay.
On the 30th.
I actually was taking notes. Can I just clarify one thing? When you're at Oaks Corner, are you going to be at Chuckles Northeast that night? Because that's
I'm going to be at the town hall for all these places. This is a town hall tour.
Oh, town hall.
I appear at the town halls for all these local towns.
Okay. All right.
What do you got for me, buddy?
Some records, because I know you like records.
Yeah, let's hear it. What do you got? Double albums? You going to talk to me about double albums?
Yeah. This is for real. This one's a little bit of a technical thing. You're going to have to tell me how you're going to play this. So Public Image's second edition, which is a double album, but it's technically from Metal Box, which is 3 45 RPM discs.
Yeah, 12-inch 45. That is not a double album.
But second edition is a double album.
Second edition is, but okay, you're fair. Second edition.
The body of work is really Metal Box. So I kind of agree with you.
Yeah, you're right. Now, you're right, though, because for a practical reason, the band Public Image Limited put out a record called Metal Box, which was basically, as it sounds, in a basically like a film canister is what you describe it as.
3 millimeter film canister, exactly.
And it was three 12-inch records, 45 RPM in the film canister. An amazing package. Yeah.
I have three of them, by the way, but yes.
Oh, I only have one, but whoop-de-doo with you and your fancy three.
I have three of them, by the way.
Really?
Well.
You got three? Where'd you get it? At the record store in North Hannibal?
No. The very first one I got in Rochester. My 16th birthday. My mom drove me to Rochester.
To Granby Center?
Archive? No, to Record Archive. And I bought, and I want to say that in 1982, I want to say I paid $40 for it, which in 1982 was a
lot of money.
Yeah.
So. A lot of money.
I still have that one. But anyway. Mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time by Donna Summer. Do you know that record? Couple of records.
Upon a Time. I mean, I know Bad Girls is a double album.
Yeah.
I have that.
Once Upon a Time didn't have any, like, quote, hits, but it's pretty amazing, and it's sort of like a concept album about, like, the Cinderella story. And I would say Rumor Has It is maybe the best track on the album, but it's pretty great. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't get much, people don't talk about it very much.
Well, I'm going to check it out. Giorgio Moroder is involved in that record. Yes, no?
Yes, I would imagine that he is.
Well, then I'm going to check it out. That's a good one.
It is a good one.
Those Donna Summer records are so incredibly revolutionary and ahead of their time.
Yes.
It's demented how important Donna Summer's work is to pretty much all music that we love.
Everything that came after it, sure. I mean,
everything the Moroder, the Donna Summer, Giorgio Moroder stuff together is some of the most stunning stuff I've ever. It's just like that's life changing.
It is, and I'm so excited if you've never heard this for you to hear it, because I was exposed to it literally when I was like 12.
Mm-hmm. We're going down memory lane with this guy. I bought a copy of Metal Box in 82. When I was 12, I heard Once Upon a Time. Well, is this Mr. Holland's opus?
My copy that I still have of Once Upon a Time.
How many do you have? Five?
No, I only have one. It's a scratchy copy from 1970.
Okay, good.
Anyway, but so those are two of my favorites. No one has mentioned some obvious ones that no one's mentioned. Tusk.
Tusk is amazing. Tusk is an album I bought when it first came out when I was a kid. That's one of the first albums I ever bought was Tusk.
Yeah. I won't tell you that I still have my original one because you know that already, but yep.
Yeah, no, I know. You're... well, guess what? I have my original copy of Tusk too. Okay.
Oh, good. All right. Why don't we compare them? We go on Discogs and see like what do you call that? The dead wax. You know.
Yeah. Well, you go on that, and the thing is, what's the best? What does it when you go on it? It's like if you want to compare copies. The thing is, if someone's copy is in worse shape, that means they're a bigger fan.
Right, because they played it more. Right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that Discog, that's a whole other world. But I don't want to talk about that.
Hold on, you don't want to talk about it? You're worried you're going to turn people onto Discogs? And
no, most trust me. Most of the people I talk to,
everyone knows about it.
Turned off of Discogs. I hate Discogs. I could spend hours some nights just on the Discogs, you know.
Yeah, but it sounds like you like Discogs, actually. You hate that you like it so much.
Yeah, I kind of do.
I hear you. I get it. What are some other double albums for you?
Oh, man.
Sign of the Times?
I thought that was a little too obvious.
I'm just naming them all. The big ones have to get named at some point also.
big ones, sure, Something, Anything, The River, Great Rock and Roll Swindle, I'd say is sort of an underrated record.
Physical Graffiti.
London Calling. Physical Graffiti, sure.
What about Daydream Nation? Do you like Daydream Nation?
With Sonic Youth?
Yes, Sonic Youth.
Yes, of course, yeah. My first thought when I saw this on Twitter earlier tonight, of course, was Double Nickels Dime, but you've talked about that already.
Sure, I think that seems to be a lot of people's sentimental favorite.
I was sort of jokingly mentioning, you know, everyone's talking about Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, but what about Blue Moves?
I don't know Blue Moves. That's like one of those, that's also in that late 70s stretch of Elton John.
It was like his last, best, worst album. I think the one last one Bernie worked on before Bernie didn't work with him for a while, and they only hit that I can think of. I think Sorry seems to be the hardest word with
the big hit from that. Okay, cool. Those are good ones.
It's a weird record. It's actually not. It's just weird. But
Look, the Donna Summer one is that made the call for me for tonight. So that's a gift that you just gave me, and I appreciate that, my friend.
Well, I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, you have a great night.
You too. Thanks,
Mike. Yeah, we're talking about the best double albums ever. What's the best one? Yes, the Daydream Nation is an incredibly important album for me. That was part of me still thinks it's the best Sonic Youth album. Well, I think it's one of the best albums ever. But there's also, look, I love so much of the Sonic Youth stuff. But that iteration of Sonic Youth kind of culminated in Daydream Nation. Another call, please. Best Show, hi.
Hi there, how are you doing?
Good. Who's this?
This is Scott, Tom.
Where are you calling from, Scott?
I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia.
From Atlanta, Georgia. I love it. Atlanta, Georgia. What's the best double album out of Atlanta, Georgia? The Outkast record?
Sure. Yeah, I guess. I don't know of any others. That's the one I know.
Find out. Somebody will prove us both wrong, eh?
Perhaps. But I have a better double album than the Outkast record.
What's that?
Yes. The Cheater Slicks, Forgive Thee.
Cheater Slicks are a wildly underrated band.
And that is maybe the apex. That's like the top of the mountain for them, which I think is saying something, that Forgive Thee record.
See, I think the top of the mountain for them is the Thinking Some More? That song?
Yeah, on Whiskey.
Yeah, with that long... Yeah. They have a, it's kind of like garagey rock never had a band do a song that long. I don't believe. Well, if somebody did, then I'm forgetting what it was, but it's like a 25 minute song, right?
Yeah. It's like it's the whole second side of the LP, I think.
Yeah. It's so great.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Cheater Slicks. Can't go wrong with Cheater Slicks.
I've got two more, but I mean that was the one I was trying to think of.
All let's hear the other two. What do you got?
Black Wave by the Lost Sounds.
That's great. Can't go, man. You're hitting all the. You're hitting a certain sweet spot with that. Yeah, Lost Sounds were an amazing band.
And then the final one is going to be Walk to the Fire by Monoshock.
Oh my God, you're right. That's such a great album. Yeah. It's wow.
It's two great albums.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Wise guy.
I apologize, Tom.
Give me a business like that. It's actually two great albums.
I was counting. I apologize.
No, that's look. We're going back and forth, buddy. You're good. No, these are fantastic choices. Cause sometimes double albums are, the domain of the the big band because they're just expensive records to put out. And most bands would not have the time or the resources to properly record a double album or especially to release a double album.
Right.
So it's, these are great ones.
Yeah. They make me happy because I realize like each of those cases, each of these bands had so many crazy songs and it totally required, you know, like two albums to pack it all in there. And there's no filler and it all hears. And it's like just this sort of ultimate expression of that band to a degree, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah. No, I love it. I love it. It is a good call. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. Have a great night. Take
care. You too. Bye. All right. We still got calls, Pat? Do we still have calls?
We got two so far. I could leave the lines open.
Let's leave those lines open. Let's get some more calls in here. 201-332-3484. You want to get in and say your favorite double album? Now's the time. Pat, do you have a favorite double album? The River, is that up there for you?
You know, it's not necessarily up there for me. Here's the deal with this topic tonight. I had to think long and hard, and I came to the realization that I don't really love double albums. To me, I guess this is just my ADD brain, but I like shorter albums, I think. I like it when the artist, the band just kind of hones in and gets, you know, a 35-40 minute album out. But there are some exceptions. I mean, you know, Exile on Main Street's probably up there. London Calling's up there. Colette had a great one. Speaker Box, The Love Below, but I wouldn't consider that a double album because they literally released them the same day separately. Those were two separate albums by each artist as a solo artist, but released under the same band name too. So I don't know. It's a gray area, I think, that one. But both are great albums. So yeah, I guess
the theme of your love of Bruce Springsteen, the River does not rate high for you, highly for you.
The River's a great album, but I think it could have been an awesome LP, just like single album, I think.
Sure.
But if we're talking about Bruce's catalog, I did really like, and I've talked about this on our sister podcast so far, which you can sign up in Patreon for.
Yes. Well, final episode coming up soon. Coming up soon.
I've talked about this on so far. I did really like, The Promise, which I guess counts as a double album, although it was three discs,
but it was like a reconfigured version of what The River could have been.
More so Darkness meets the time in between that and The River, you know? But I liked that album because I think just as a fan, because so much material was unearthed and he went back and like did stuff, but didn't tweak it too much, didn't go beyond the era's production, you know, and got creative with assembling horn sections that weren't there and stuff. I think he took like Southside Johnny's horns or something. That was like exciting at the time as a fan. And I still go back to that a lot, but I love The River, but it's not, I don't think it's like, you know, my favorite Bruce album, and it's not my favorite. I don't know. As far as a double album goes, it's good, but there's a lot of, you know, it takes a lot of roads. I think Darkness is just like a perfect record because you know how much he cut to make that a great album, you know?
Okay.
That's it. Anyway, that's my take.
All right. Fair enough. Give me another call, please. Besho, hi.
Hello.
Hello. To whom am I speaking?
This is Teresa in Kentucky.
Teresa in Kentucky. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. I was wondering, can I use you as a personal Shazam? Because you were around in the 80s and older than me in the 80s, and you tend to remember stuff.
Sure. What would you like to know? Well, let's see if we can do. Do you have something you want to play that you can't identify?
Well, I mean, there's this, like, lately there's this commercial that it always triggers me because it's just a library track, but it sounds like something that was on the radio that I've been trying to track down for, like, my 38 years on this planet.
Okay.
And I, like, never got the artist or the title. And I, like, my hunch is where it's either a Police or a Genesis song because, like, they kind of sound alike to me. I think there's a sound on Message in a Bottle that overlaps between Police and Genesis. And I probably heard, like, all of Abacab, but never got the titles to any of them. So it could totally be on that Genesis album, too.
So how can you convey this song to us? Are you going to sing it?
A few bars. Just put, come on and open the door. Come on and open the door.
Let my love open the door. Yeah, that's Peter Townsend. That's Pete Townsend.
That's Townsend. It's not real at all.
No, it's from a solo album called Empty Glass, called Let My Love Open the Door.
Let My Love Open the Door. Okay. Yeah. Pete Townsend. That's another one of those where I know the name and I never have quite gotten it sorted out in my head.
Mm-hmm. He's the dude from The Who. It's like one of his solo albums.
He went solo. Yeah, people from The Who going solo too. Mm-hmm. I just got stuck on Peter Gabriel. I like his solo stuff all the time.
Oh yeah. No, that's
like digging in the dirt.
Well, look, you got it now. How's that feel?
Thank you. That's like a good 30 years of never finding that and getting it sorted out in several music conversations with other friends, and it never turned out.
Wow. That's why you got to come to the best show. You'll get your answers.
Yeah. I have to track down Pete. Yeah. I have to figure out what my favorite Pete Townshend song is. It might still be that one.
It might be that. Yeah. That's a good song.
Mm-hmm. Is Abacab a double album?
I don't think Abacab's a double album. They put a live album out called Three Sides Live around that period that is a double album.
Three Sides Live. And it's not, is that one disc per word, like three, and the second disc is sides, and the third disc is live?
The way it was three, like four, there's four sides to a double album, obviously, and the fourth side was new studio tracks.
New studio tracks.
Yeah.
And Abacab's not like a double album with one track, one disc, ABBA, and the other disc, CAV, and then both.
I don't think that's how they did it. I don't think they had an ABBA disc and a CAB disc. Mm-hmm. What if one disc was them doing ABBA songs and the other was them doing CAB Calloway songs? If that's what ABBA CAB was, that's a Genesis album I'd want to hear.
It looks like the same word to me twice because I'm kind of dyslexic. ABBA.
Well, no, it's a tricky thing because it's not a word. Yeah, it's just ABBA's like backwards. Yeah, it's kind of a handful to look at. Yeah. Well, this is you know, anything else, Teresa?
Is 69 Love Songs by Magnetic Fields a double album?
How did that come out originally? I'm trying to remember. How was that thing configured at first? I don't think it was in two LPs. Why am I blanking on that? I had it when it came out. Can't remember what form it came out in. Was it three albums? I don't remember.
It might be three discs.
Might have been, yeah. A lot of songs in there.
Huge paper booklet of lyrics in the middle.
A lot of songs. 69 of them, to be exact.
Mm-hmm. I like Reno Dakota the best. As I was trying to figure out what the Pantone shade is.
Mm-hmm. I love
it when you can hear colors.
What's that called again? That's called synesthesia.
Yeah.
Being able to see hear colors.
Yeah. Reno Dakota blue is the Pantone color for synesthesia.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have, I can't relate. It's funny. Cause I've never
heard things like that. I don't have that outlook on things, or however you would describe it. I've never been able to, I don't see sound. They're very different things for me.
You don't think there are yellow notes?
No, I'm sure there are. I don't necessarily take in music that way, to where there's a visual aspect to the literal sound of it.
Like in band class, we talked about it one day in middle school, and it just established that, like, we didn't all agree on the same color, but like one of them, I think we all agreed on G being green, because that's just an easy place to go to. It's probably like some mentalist technique on part of my band director. Mm-hmm. So we think because the word green starts with G, that the G must be green. And I mm-hmm. thought A was red. And I don't know if everybody agreed with me on A being red because of apples, or it could actually also be green or yellow because apples are also those colors.
Yeah, I don't know. We make these associations with things and these connections, and sometimes they're universal and sometimes they're completely only make sense to us. It's a strange thing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for the call. And you call anytime you want.
Thank you, Tom.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon.
Sure.
All right, bye. All right. Any more calls, Pat?
We have three right now. Real quick on the river, I just thought of something.
What's that?
It's that I like practically every song on that album.
Let me see. I bet you I can guess a song you don't like on that album.
There's one song I don't like on it, and it's not only that I don't like it, it's that it's my least favorite Bruce Springsteen song.
Point Blank.
Nope.
Jackson Cage.
Nope.
Hungry Heart.
Bingo. I hate Hungry Heart. It is a cheese sandwich.
Can you believe that?
Oh my gosh. That Barry.
Can you believe this guy? No, I can't believe this guy.
That's Pat. God bless you, Pat. But look, on this one, Hungry Heart. I literally played Hungry Heart in the last few days to hear Hungry Heart.
You guys are nuts. That Barry Sachs makes it a cheese sandwich. It's like, why don't you just invite Sean and Anna to come out?
Okay, I will.
Yeah, I would before that.
They got Flo and Eddie on the thing, Pat.
New appreciation of Bowser.
He wrote it for the Ramones.
And I don't know what they would have done with it.
It would have been made it would a have hit. Been, it would have, you know how that would have gone, Pat? It would have gone, boom. They would have gone, 1, 2, 3, 4. Got a wife and kids in Baltimore, Jack. I went for a ride, but I never came back. That's how it would have been. And it would have been amazing.
That is exactly
what it would have been. A massive hit for them.
It would have been on the Phil Spector album. But here, look, I'm not defending the Ramones for not being cheese sandwiches. The actual song, Rock and Roll High School.
I'm really taking offense to cheese sandwiches here.
Rock and Roll High School is literally a Shana cheese sandwich special. Okay, it's pretty bad too.
Let me just say this, Pat.
Rock and Roll High School is.
You have some. I want to say this, and don't take this the wrong way.
Go ahead.
You've never used the phrase cheese sandwich before. You used it 8 times now. Do you have some affiliation with a cheese sandwich shop that you're going to slip in like a? You'd be like, and speaking of cheese sandwiches, and you want the best cheese sandwiches in Jersey City.
I didn't
what kind have of cheese.
I didn't have cheddar. I didn't have time to make dinner, bring a dinner, order dinner. Mm-hmm. So literally, you
got cheese sandwich on the brain.
That's all you're thinking.
Literally about. In the fridge here at Best Show Studio, Jersey City, which we are soon to pack up. I have in this fridge some cheddar cheese and some bread and. Okay. On the next
sandwich,
I might make a cheese sandwich.
Make the sandwich. Yeah. Make the cheese sandwich.
Post a picture of it on the Instagram.
Why don't you sing Hungry Heart while eating it?
I will not do that, but we have three calls. Next call.
When you eat that cheese sandwich, maybe that'll be like your version of synesthesia. Like you'll see, you'll hear Hungry Heart as you bite the cheese sandwich, as you taste, the cheese and suddenly in your mind, you're like, boom, down, down. Dun, dun, dun.
Look, I love Bruce, but Hungry Heart sucks. Sorry, guys.
So what do you do when he plays it live? You go to the John?
Now, no, I just tolerate it.
Now, you, Pat's one of the ones who sings the first verse out loud, and then Bruce goes, really? You hate, what's, well, what's your other least favorite Bruce Springsteen song then?
Probably Dancing in the Dark.
Streets of Philadelphia.
That's, Philadelphia's up there, but.
Secret Garden.
Born to Run.
Secret Garden is better.
Born to Run.
I have a song.
Crush on you.
Thunder Road.
That is great. Get out of here.
Ramrod.
Ramrod's great.
Yeah.
Come on. I'm a rocker.
I'm a Rocker, you know, is not the best on the album, but it's good.
Growing Up.
Growing Up is a great, is a classic. Come on. No, this, the other song I don't like is called Pony Boy. It's on 75 to 85 Live. You want to pull it up, Tom?
Do I want to pull it up? Now I...
Hey, Tom, could you pull up Pony Boy?
It's the second worst Bruce Springsteen song. I think it's a cover.
Or he does it on Human Touch, doesn't he?
No, but I have a soft spot for Human Touch and Lucky Town also.
Well, yeah, there is a Pony Boy is on Human Touch also, Pat.
Yeah.
Oh, then play it on that. That's what it's on.
Okay. It's track 14.
Yeah, that song's terrible.
Pony boy, won't you be my pony boy? Giddy up, whoa, my pony boy.
Can you rank this below Hungry Heart?
Big time.
Hold on.
Big time.
So, what? Hungry Heart's worse than Pony Boy.
Hungry Heart is worse than, I don't know. They might be tied for first.
Don't even say it.
Yeah.
Pony boy, yippee-yay, pony boy.
I forgot about Outlaw Pete. That's up there,
too. Outlaw Pete's up there.
Outlaw Pete.
Well, look, so to you, The River is not a classic double album because it's got Hungry Heart on it, okay? That's, yeah. You're on, you might have that lane all to yourself. On that one,
yeah.
There's probably a bunch of songs I would have said would have been the reason you didn't like The River, and Hungry Heart is, I threw it out there thinking it was a dumb thing to say, and you're like, yep, that's the one. But look, to each their own. I get it.
I only wish that when I met him at the Barnes and Nobles, mm-hmm. that the person that went up after me in the line just leaned into him and said, that guy hates Hungry Heart. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Could have been nice. Jason.
Could have been you, Jason.
Yeah, it could have been me. Yeah. And Springsteen would have said, he's acting like a real pony boy. Mm-hmm. No one said Lamb Lies Down on Broadway yet, have they?
Yeah, not yet.
That's probably my favorite double album.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I love Lamb. I also love Unlimited
Lamb.
Love.
Don't call it Lamb.
Lamb. Like, hey, I'm going to go in my office and listen to some
Lamb. You got enough time to say The Lamb Lies Down. You don't have anywhere better to be to where you have need those extra 2 seconds back.
Does saying Lamb bother you as much as Cheese Sandwich did?
It bothers me more.
It bothers really?
Way more, actually.
I'm too comfortable with Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
To call it Lamb.
Yeah, I listened to Lamb last night.
Look, there's some band about to play that live out here, too. Do a full Lamb Lies Down on Broadway. Yeah.
So they're going to play Lamb.
Yeah, Lamb Lies Live. That's your favorite double album, man.
That's up there. It's really far up there. I mean, I like Queen Live Killers, mm-hmm. of course.
Mm-hmm.
The Robert Pollard from A Compound Eye.
It's a classic. That's a great one.
It is a really great double record.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing I want to do at some point in my life, about 10 or so years ago, I ripped on the album Lulu by Lou Reed and Metallica. Why? Because I was just being a wise guy. It was easy. Lou Reed hanging out with Metallica is low-hanging fruit.
was easy to goof on. But you know what? I've listened to it. I've listened to it since over the years. It's a pretty heavy duty album. It's an insanely intense album. And when you realize that Lou was basically using this as his farewell in a lot of ways, it's unbelievably moving. And I still have problems with the Metallica part of things because I don't like Metallica, but so be it.
Have you ever watched some of the live videos with them performing Velvet Underground songs together?
Did I? I don't. I maybe I blocked it out. Like
a couple years
then ago. Then I saw it. If you sent it to me, then I saw it.
I think I sent you Sweet Jane or something.
Okay.
It's just like very distorted and about the same tempo.
But the thing is, their touch, Metallica have no touch. There's no touch with those guys. So Lou Reed brought them on board for this double, this Lulu double album. And the point of it was to get the record. He thought they were the right band for it. And that also they would get some attention because they're Metallica. So it ended up an interesting experiment for them, but for him, it was a really intense basically concluding his artistic, creative, and physical, temporal existence. It's heavy duty. Mike, double albums, what are your favorites?
I was just thinking of the ones I played the most, and that would probably be London Calling.
Okay, London Calling. Good one. I once traded, when I was a kid, I traded a copy of L.A. Woman for a copy of London Calling, which kind of defined my future.
You were making a break. Yeah, you made a statement with that.
That's trade. A good trade.
That pretty much was me saying, this is the road I'm going down.
Uh-huh. How short-lived was your Doors fascination?
Pretty short.
It was
pretty short. I tried it. I liked certain songs. Other stuff just never sounded right to me. Like, I'd listen to L.A. Woman, that album, and suddenly I'd be like, their song sound would be just like, I don't know what this is. This is not for me. This is just not my scene. Like, and the Clash seemed infinitely more my scene. It's funny because the Clash are all now, the way my life has evolved. The Clash are not one of my top bands. Ultimately, I think they're amazing, but I don't go back and put those records on necessarily. But at that point, they were huge for me.
Yeah,
they represented something pretty huge. So London Calling's a big one for you. Any other ones?
Well, Exile on Main, the kind of the standard ones,
Standards, yeah. Europe 72, was that a big one for you?
Yeah, I like those records. But
that's the one with the kid smashing the ice cream cone on his
head. Yeah, that was a triple record, actually.
Oh, okay, well then you can't talk about it, sorry. Can't talk about that, can't talk about Welcome Back, My Friends, the show that never ends. Can't talk about Yes songs. Those are out. Can't talk about All Things Must Pass. These are off the table, those albums. Even though the third album with All Things Must Pass is kind of not really a part of the thing. It's called Apple Jam, and it's just those guys screwing around in the studio. Yeah. Pat, any more calls?
Well, now we have a full house.
Oh, look at that. Let's take them. Let's see where these four go, and then we'll take it from there.
Do you count live albums?
I would count a live album because I'd count Live Rust is one of my favorites.
Like Strangers in the Night, UFO. That's a good record.
Okay. Well, any other ones you like there, Eddie Trunk?
And with that, I'm going on mute.
Yeah. No, don't go.
That's probably the best burn I've had in a long time. I felt that one and I appreciate it.
No, just because UFO is literally his favorite band.
Yeah.
It's the only reason.
It's a band that I've gotten into recently. I never really listened to much of them. So, but I do really enjoy Strangers.
Listen to Rock Bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Might get some of that stuff on the rock, on the hawk.
Yeah, put it on the hawk. And I followed you and Mike. Mike tweeted that I wasn't.
That's kind. Well, yeah. Thank you. So, well, yeah, what other, yeah, I would say, you can put a double album on there because there was a point where a live double album.
Yeah.
Live Rust was a huge one for me, Neil Young. But one that was a big one for me really was the Game Theory had an album called Lolita Nation that was a double album, and it was filled with so much amazing, ridiculous stuff in it. And at that point, they just went for it. It's such a strange, intense record. Double Nickels on the Dime, though. Zen Arcade is another great one. Husker Du. So, you know, SST had a couple double albums right there in the same window. Was it 84? Was it 84 for both of those?
I think it was.
Let's see. Double Nickels came out on... came out in 84. Yep.
And then Zen came out on July 1st, 1984.
Look at that.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm. You know what we're going to do? We're going to play a song and we'll be right back. And we'll wrap up with the final calls about the double album. So how's that sound?
Works for me.
And I send this one out to my friend, Pat Byrne. No, I'm not playing that for you. I scared you there for a second, didn't I, Pat?
You could have felt the head shake from California.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to do it to you. We'll play something from another great double album. Let's find a short one on here. We'll play it by our friends Can. Yeah, Can. Mushroom Head from Tagomago or Tagomago. And I know there's some... Can's not one of Mike's favorite bands, but what are you going to do? Todd Rundgren's one people keep suggesting over on Twitter. Something Anything is a great album. You used to love that album. Mr. Big loved that album so much. Big loved listening to Hello, It's Me so much. And it just ran through... he would just listen to when they were going through their albums. Him and Carrie were listening to all their albums. They used to listen to, they eventually got to Something Anything, and basically that album killed him. That album killed him. Let's see what other things people are saying on Twitter. Oh, somebody mentioned the Car Seat Headrest album, Teens of Denial. Yeah, that's a great, great album. Yeah. They didn't, the one thing they didn't do in that, when he was playing the album, Something Anything, he clearly was getting the wrong spot where Hello, It's Me is on the record on side four. He probably would have been playing, Dust in the Wind or the My Roots Overture on side four instead of that song. But we don't nitpick, do we? Yeah, we do. Hey, give me another call, Pat, please. Hello, hi, best show.
Hi. Hello. I have something for the topic.
To whom am I speaking?
This is Casey from Washington Township, New Jersey.
Well, welcome to the show, Casey.
Story.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
What do you got for us?
Okay. I don't know if this will, you know, let me know how this goes.
Well, I certainly will. What do you think? It's the best show. What do you think? I'm not going to let you know how it goes?
Oh, sure. Of course.
But you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine, Casey.
How about, okay, I'll just have with it. Destroyer's Kaput on vinyl.
It's true. That's a double album on vinyl because it's got that really long. What's that?
He added the Laziest River.
Yeah, he added the Laziest River. And then same thing on the vinyl for Rubies, right?
That's true.
There's a really long, a really long piece on the vinyl for Rubies, if I'm not mistaken. Am I mistaken?
I believe so.
Wow. Yeah, well, okay, that's a good one. What else you got?
Really, that's all I had. Just one. Has anyone, I mean, I'll throw this out, Zen Arcade.
Yeah, Zen Arcade is perfect. That's a great one. Yeah.
You know, but that's, you know, that's all I got.
No, that's great, though. You like the new Destroyer album?
I do. I've only listened to it once. I got to really sit with it, but yeah, it sounds pretty great.
Pretty awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. He's on a hot streak like nobody's been on. It's nuts. It's unfair.
I totally agree.
Well, what are we going to do? The rest of us mere mortals can only admire it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Okay. Thanks. Bye. Let's take another call, please. We'll do these four calls and let's wrap it up. Please. Hello, best show.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I'm good. To whom am I speaking?
This is John in Northern Virginia in Falls Church.
John in Falls Church, Virginia. What's up, John?
I've got one from the Daydream Nation era, Double Bummer by Bongwater.
Oh, that is so funny that you said that. I was thinking about that earlier. Double Bummer is a great example. That is lost to time a little bit. The whole Bongwater shimmy disc thing is not nearly as kind of understood or recognized as for what it was at the time. Man, Double Bummer was huge. I don't know where you're at in terms of when you came.
It was at our radio station. We played it all the time, you know.
Yeah. But I mean, just in terms of the legacy of it, mm-hmm. It seems like it hasn't. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it has sustained its kind of like reputation. Because it was like everybody loved Bongwater so much, and well, not everybody, but And where did that, didn't that rank really high on like a Village Voice? Like, let me look when that was that 88. Yeah, it was 88. Let's see. Village Voice, Paz and Jomp poll 1988. Let's see what comes up when I search for that. Where did that land on that list? Didn't it land on it? Why am I? I'm misremembering then wildly. Yikes.
Unless it was 89 or something, but I think it was 88. I thought it
was 88 too. Yeah, I mean, 88, Sonic Daydream Nation was second on the Paz and Jomp right after It Takes a Nation of Millions.
Millions, yeah.
Yeah. Man, that was a good year right there. You look at that.
I mean, maybe it's because I think their output sort of declined from there. I mean, they started off hot, and then
yeah. Oh man, I, for some reason, I don't know, I misremembered that. What are you gonna do? So yeah, that's a great one. Thanks for bringing that up, because I thought about it earlier today and then forgot to bring it up on the air.
Yeah, okay,
thanks. Yeah, Sharon on Twitter telling me, bringing up the second Suede album, Dogman Star, that's a great double album. Yeah, love it. Another call, please. Hello, Best Show.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm good. To whom am I speaking?
This is Ben in Sacramento.
Ben in Sacramento. What's going on, Ben? How are things in Sacramento? That tragedy, it's awful. What happened in Sacramento?
Yeah, actually, I was asleep, and it only happened about a mile from my apartment, but I was not privy to it at all, thankfully. So hopefully, I guess I don't. It's hard to. Sorry, I wasn't expecting to talk about this, so I don't.
No. I just wanted to say it as an aside that my condolences, obviously, to Sacramento. That's rough. So yeah, that's all I wanted to say. But let's talk about the stuff we're going to talk about.
Okay. I just had a few albums, and I feel like people have gone over so many of the classics, lots of 60s through 80s stuff. So I was trying to think of like post 2000, kind of get some newer stuff in there.
Sure.
Somebody already said Lost Sounds, Black Wave. That was going to be one of mine.
Yeah.
Oneida, Each One Teach One.
Each One Teach One. That's a great one. That there is nothing floored me as much as that first song on Each One Teach One. The first time I heard that, and it was like, look into the light. Like, I just remember being just laid out, because I loved and still love Oneida, and that was just a real pinnacle for them. That's a great call. Thank you for bringing that up.
I'm sorry. I was just gonna say I'll put that on sometimes when I'm running, and then just like completely lose track of all time, and I've gone miles and didn't even realize it.
That's amazing. That could be a part of. We were going to do a topic of what the stuff that gets you pumped up. That would actually, you'd have two calls for Each One Teach One by Oneida for two different topics.
Yeah.
I should check out. I guess Kid Millions has an album out now. I guess about his car crash
accident. Yeah, it's really, really good. I just ordered it on like last Bandcamp Friday. It's great.
I gotta get it. I gotta check it out. What else you got, buddy?
The other ones I had, Friends of Tom, F'd Ups,
David Comes to Life is a huge one. Yep. And it's funny because that album like blew up for them. Yeah, like doing a double album, and suddenly that's everybody got on board. I think some people get very excited about the promise of what a double album can be, because it seems like you're maybe saying something larger than what you usually say, because you just have that much more real estate.
Yeah.
So people get very excited about double albums in that regard.
Yeah, and it's also, especially when it's a band like F'd Up, or like punk bands in general tend to be, shorter songs. I mean, once F'd Up started doing albums, like they were longer, but they were like just a singles band to begin with. And then to go from that to putting out a double album.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to go from No Passeron to spreading out the way they spread out with all the Zodiac stuff is amazing. Yeah. Anything else?
Just one more. I guess in this one from just a couple months ago, the new Irreversible Entanglements record, Open the Gates.
Man, I don't know it. What is that?
It's like people from, I think, like New York, DC, and Chicago, or New York, Philly, and Chicago. It's like modern jazz. I don't know if you know Moore Mother, the rapper and electronic artist, but she's like the front person of the band, and so it's like very like improvisational, like super like revolutionary political jazz, I guess I'd call it.
Wow. Well, I want to know about this. Let me.
Yeah.
Seriously, I gotta write this down.
I don't know if they're still touring, but they played in the Bay Area. But like, I drove down to the Bay Area to see them about a month ago. Easily like one of the best shows I've seen. And in a couple of years doesn't mean much, because there haven't been that many shows. Yeah. But in a very, very,
because you could say that was the best show you saw, and then the other show you saw would also be the second best show and the worst show you saw.
It would.
Well, what was the name of it again, please?
Irreversible Entanglements. The Yeah, I guess so. Like the most famous woman is, or most famous member is Moore Mother, who's like the front woman.
Okay, cool. I got it.
Like he has rap records and
electric. Okay, amazing. No, I appreciate the. I appreciate you because that's what I also want to do with. I'll say this: there's going to be some changes to Best Show going forward because I'm in Los Angeles. Reality is I'm in Los Angeles. Got a studio set up out here that we're going to go kind of heavy with. Pat referenced earlier that we are closing up the Jersey City studio. That is happening. And, but we're not closing up the, look, I'll say this right off the bat. We're not closing up. The crew is the crew. And that's where that is at. So that's not what we're doing here. It's just a reality as I live here now. Nobody's going away. But there's going to be some opportunities to do some special stuff with the new facility that I, have access to and have. It's my studio. You know, it's something I'm, didn't win a contest. This is a studio I'm renting. So I'm going to use it and there's going to be a chance to do a lot of music stuff in it. And we're going to do a lot of new things with the show, including kind of stepping up the music side of things, which I'm very, very excited about. So I kind of feel like it's a new, exciting opportunity for a lot of stuff like that. And to kind of get me and other people excited about some music. Cause we're going to have some crazy, options with this studio. Seriously crazy options. More to follow on that. But yeah, no, that's also, I appreciate the heads up on that.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. And that sounds great. There've been plenty of awesome music moments on the show. So,
well, as I heard them on 102.9, the Hawk, Bachman Turner Overdrive would say, you ain't seen nothing yet. Baby, no, you ain't seen nothing yet. So get ready. Thanks.
All right. Have a good one, Tom.
Good night. Good night to you, my friend. All right. Next call, please.
Final call.
Final call. Here we go. Hello, Best Show.
Hey, Tom. This is Rob from Rochester, New York. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How are you, Rob?
I'm doing well. Thank you. So, first of all, you did it, you rat bastard.
Thank you. That's the motto for 2022. And if you think I did it, you better get ready because I am about to done do it even more. And let me say this. So, you know what I was thinking of, Rob and everybody? You know, this Will Smith, he put a book out. His autobiography came out last year, I believe, late last year.
Okay.
What is he going to do with, he's going to have a paperback come out at some point. So is he going to like write just an additional chapter about the slap? It'll make it the most in-demand book ever. Like his version of the slap. If he writes like a bonus chapter about that.
You mean the slapendix?
A slapendix. You're 100% right. I wish you weren't. I wish you were 100% wrong, but it is a slapendix.
Speaking of Will Smith, I'm sorry, I came in just a little bit late, and I heard you guys were already discussing the music of Will Smith. Did you talk about the album, He's the DJ and the Rapper, which happens to be a double album?
We did talk about how that's a double album, but I also clarified that my love of... I love Will Smith albums. Mm-hmm. Fresh Prince albums. Fresh Prince is a character that Will Smith played. I don't love everything that Fresh Prince did. I love everything Will Smith has done, including the slap.
Okay.
I don't love the slap. I'm sorry. But again, I will say after this past week, I did try to go back and watch Shark Tale. And it just doesn't move the needle anymore. It's heartbreaking. Just give me back Shark Tale. That's all I ask. If there's a God in heaven, please give me back my Shark Tale. Please.
I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
So the reason for my call, yes, kind of got stepped on just a little bit, because as soon as I called in and restarted my audio player, I heard Studio jump on my choice, which I'm not a big fan of calling it Lamb, but I am a big fan of The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway.
Oh, do you? So you're a fan, but you don't refer to it as Lamb.
Yeah, because I figure Genesis already has Trespass, they have Duke, they have Abacab, they have single word album titles. They don't need to shorten the longer ones to a single word.
Mm-hmm. And that's the album where he was dressed like the Fruit of the Loom guys, right? Is that the one?
Yeah.
Where he went on stage dressed like the grapes from the Fruit of the Loom ads?
Yeah. So, I mean, I never really, I saw the concert video once, but, you know, I don't have that image stuck in my head, and I could see how that might ruin it for some people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a question for you. What do you think of the song The Waiting Room on that album?
Look, I never liked that album.
You never liked it at all? Oh, okay.
No, it never did it for me. I tried. I like other Genesis albums with Peter Gabriel. I just never liked that one. There's something so weirdly stagey about it. And I know that's like maybe the point of it, but it never did anything for me, maybe because of that.
Okay. Yeah, I just didn't know. So you kind of the nickname for that track is Evil Jam. So that's the one with all the weird noises and moans and stuff, and it kind of turns into a rock jam towards the end. But the reason I brought that up is that brought to mind another double album, which is sort of, I feel influenced by it, which is Lifeforms by the Future Sound of London. Are you familiar with that one or not really?
Wait, which one's that?
The band is the Future Sound of London.
No, I'm not familiar.
And they did a double album called Lifeforms. I believe it came out in 1994.
Okay.
It's kind of interesting because you can kind of hear the same sort of, I don't know, they sort of come from the same cloth. It's ambient, but at the same time, it's like kind of a little disturbing at the same time. You know, it's kind of fun in a weird sort of way. So I would say definitely check it out. See what you think.
No, that's in Future Sounds of London. I will.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, Life After Death by Notorious B.I.G. is one that we didn't mention yet. That's a great one. Sebado 3. Somebody just tweeted Sebado 2. It's Sebado 3, my friend. Come on, Mike. Yeah, those are great. And I will check that out. I'm excited about finding some new stuff.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Even if it's old stuff. Right. All right. Thanks, buddy. All right. Final call there. How about that? So in conclusion, Dudio, your favorite double album is?
Yeah, I'm probably going to go Lamb.
Lamb.
Yeah.
Pat, yours is?
I don't know. I guess Exile.
Exile.
Exile's very good.
Yeah. Mike, yours is?
London Calling.
Why'd you say the whole thing? You just want to say London?
London Calling. I said London Calling, didn't I?
No. But I don't know why you said the whole title.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Because we got Lamb, Exile, London.
Calling.
Yeah,
I call it calling.
Probably calling.
Yeah, calling. Okay.
What about you, Tom?
It's tricky. I might say, ultimate. Look, the White Album always is something that means so much to me. But I almost think you have to exempt the Beatles from some of these things because it's just like, then they just clog up every list. My favorite double album. It really might be, it might be Daydream Nation. That's a big one for me. Even over, Zen Arcade and Double Nickels. Daydream Nation really was, that's kind of when I started to really go deep in, like I had Sister and liked Sister, the previous, Sonic Youth album, but, Daydream Nation really, it hit an 88. 88, it made sense. It really felt like it was an album for its time also, which is kind of, there was like a power to that also that, yeah. Yeah, that's where we're at. And Pat, do you want to talk about the studio stuff?
Yes. If everyone keeps, their eyes peeled to our Instagram, if you live in the New Jersey, New York area, surrounding area, tri-state, and you are in need of a couch or some tables, some things that we're not going to pack, some big ticket items that we are not going to pack to the LA Best Show Studio, we will be posting some photos. And the way we're going to do it is we're not going to charge anyone anything for these, but we are going to ask for a donation to the New Jersey Food Bank. For the larger ticket items, we're going to say $50 or more donation, and you could just send us a screen share of your donation, and that will be enough proof for us. But again, and this will be posted
today. And also make the donation in say it's like for the Best Show Studio when you do the donation, that way we can, because it's just like it's We're really giving this stuff away at a it's an incredible bargain. So just do that so we know that it's all going in the right place. And then the food bank, it's the what food bank again? Central.
It's just the New Jersey Food Bank. Food Bank of New Jersey. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll put all the correct information on Instagram with photos. And if you come by, you can take a picture in front of the Best Show mural while you're here, and I'll give you a sticker, and that'll be that.
Think of everyone that sat on that couch.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd sat on that couch.
James Murphy. John Spencer.
Yeah. AP Mike. Me.
Claire O'Kane.
Yeah. Claire O'Kane. Mary Houlihan.
Lance Bangs.
Lance Bleepin' Bangs.
Julie Klausner.
Yeah. The real who's who sat on that couch.
Neil Haggerty
sat on that couch. All right. No, that's really great. So check the Twitter for the Best Show account, which is Best Show number 4 Life.
Yes, that's Best Show number 4 Life at symbol mm-hmm. Instagram. And yeah, you could finally learn for the price of a $50 donation, you can finally learn where the Best Show Studio was for the whole time. However many years.
Yeah. You'll finally learn on the way out. The
secrets and more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all for a good cause.
Yeah. So please be a part of that. It's a fun way. We're trying to do a fun and constructive way of making the move. So that's one of the things we're doing. Yeah. And thanks everybody. Any other announcements? 108.9 The Hawk as always.
Yeah. 108.9 The Hawk. Where you and get
follow podcasts. Jason changed his social media handles.
Yeah.
Now it's Mr. Jason Gore.
Mr. Jason Gore. You got to have a brand.
MR.
Thank you.
MR. Finally, the Sonic Dork thing
done.
Which look served its purpose at the time.
Yeah,
it's not who you are anymore.
I'm not that.
In fact, one of the things we'll be auctioning off is Jason's Doctor Who robe.
No, that's going. That's coming, Pat. I told you.
No, that's
going. $50. No. I already said that. No. That's coming here.
Throw it out.
We can ship it separately. I'll pay.
This is what I would say with the Doctor Who scarf. ship it out to Jason. But if in the meantime, any listener who gets like the couch or whatever comes by, if they like throw up, like use it as a, use it to sop up any barf from any listener.
Oh,
then send it back to you. No, then we'll send it back to
you. Yeah. Oh, please.
Hey man, where's your couch? I'm the best show. Hey man, where's that Doctor Who scarf? I got a barf. Now, thanks everybody for listening, and we will be back next week. And I appreciate all of you. Bye bye.
Bye.